Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And 51551 is our text number. Continuing our self-published books, again, we'll be using Twitter today, at Joe Liveline, at RT Liveline. And remember, Monday we're doing the top 10 highs and lows of the decade. I read a few people saying it was a low, dishonest decade for various reasons. But we're asking people to reflect back on the decade. We will give you the 10, basically they're the 10 that won and lost, so to speak, the highs and lows over the last 10 years here on Liveline. We've been doing it for much longer than that. And then we'll have a slew of panellists and a historian, and you will vote, and you will decide what your number one high point of that last decade has been and what your number one low point of the last decade has been. By the way, we don't do deaths. We don't try and compare one atrocity or one war to another. So, and it is the eve of Christmas Eve, so there's a certain flavour to it. But to join us, that's Monday, and then Tuesday morning outside of Bailey in Duke Street for our annual traditional 9 to 11 Christmas Eve outside broadcast. Con Hurley. Con, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
The name of your book is?
Shadows on My Shoulder.
Okay, tell us about it.
Shadows on My Shoulder is all about my life growing up in the north side of the city.
In Cork,
My mother passed away at 52 years of age after having 21 siblings.
Wow. 22 children?
21.
21
children, Joe, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And between what ages and what ages did she have the children?
Well, from the time she got married, she was married at 19 years of age, and by the age of 36, she had 21 children.
So in 17 years?
Yes.
Your mother had 21 children?
Yes, and unfortunately passed away at 52 years of age.
And was there more than 21, can I ask, was there more than 21 pregnancies?
No, 21 pregnancies, okay. And there was two sets of twins passed away before myself and my twin sister were born. And the only one I remember of all of the family to be alive was baby Michael, and he was the seventh son, and he had passed away at 3 months old.
And the twins that died, what age were they, Con?
They were young. They died very young of tuberculosis.
Well, you say young, do you mean a year, 2 years? Or
6 months, I think, within 6 months.
So your mother and father had them?
Yes.
And were rare? Oh, my God.
Yes.
So many are still alive of the 21 of you?
Nine of us.
And what age would the eldest of the 20... Is the eldest still alive, if you follow
me? Oh, the eldest is still alive, yeah.
So what age is the eldest?
The eldest is 65.
Okay, well, that's young. And getting younger by the year. But
yes.
The eldest is 65, but yet there's only nine surviving.
Nine living, yeah.
So that means 12 died, all of whom would be under 65 now, if you follow me.
That's right, yeah.
And so 12 died prematurely?
Yes, because of tuberculosis and because of other complications that were in the family period before I came along, you know.
So then you joined the army and you had...
Then I joined the Defence Forces. And the reason why I joined the Defence Forces is because I followed my father's footsteps and my four brothers' footsteps as well. And it was something that I wanted to do, and I couldn't wait to get in to join the Defence Forces. And I had a great life in the Defence Forces, and I'd recommend it to any young lad growing up today that they wanted to go anywhere, go into the Defence Forces. There's a lot of discipline, and you know what I mean, it's fantastic. Mm. You know, and I can't say enough about the Defence Forces.
Okay.
You know,
and how did you,
a good life.
How did you slip into alcohol and gambling addiction?
Well, when I was in the Defence Forces, I suppose, you know, I was taught how to drink. I picked up my first drink ever at 17 years of age when I joined the Defence Forces, and of course, being out with the lads, I thought I was... I suppose everybody and anybody, and I used to mix my drinks in the evening. I used to put in lots of whiskey and brandy into Smithwick's, and you know, me being the big boy at 17 years of age, and I wanted to be one of the boys and everything else, and I was unstoppable, I suppose, Joe, you know. And even like if I got into arguments or anything like that, I suppose I thought I was Superman, you know, thinking I could beat the whole world, you know, especially with drink involved.
And Con, how did you fight your way out of addiction?
Well, how I fought my way out of addiction, Joe, was after, I suppose, with my wife, I got married, and I left the Defence Forces, you know, a year and a half to go to my pension. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I left is because the VAR came up early general retirement, and my commanding officer asked me, was I mad? Was there something wrong? Because I do only have to go to my pension. And I couldn't tell him then that I was in the midst of gambling and alcoholism at the time. And I was in severe debt. You know, my wife was struggling. My two kids were struggling. And, you know, they didn't have a life because of what I was doing, you know. And I surmountable debts. And when I got the VAR, which was a five-figure sum, I thought that everything would be okay. And I'd solve everything with the money that I got. But unfortunately for me, I didn't. I went back to my old ways of thinking and living, and, you know, I was just manipulating everything at home, and I was going out. It was all about me and nobody else, you know. Yeah. And my kids went hungry, and my wife, you know, was trying to keep a great pay, you know, and everything that I was doing.
But then you got involved, which is the where we are now, so to speak. You got involved in counselling.
I actually got involved through working voluntary with Coomer Addiction Centre, you know, and Sister Consilio and Sister Agnes, and fantastic people, and they run five different treatment centres all over Ireland. And I got done that voluntary, and after a year and a half I was offered a job in the transition house in Limerick for people that's been through their addictions. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we give them a new way of living and thinking, I suppose, and you know, like taking baby steps like which I had to do with my meetings and things like that, and going to GA meetings and AA meetings, you know. And only for them people in the rooms, and only for the job that I got, I wouldn't be where I am today, you know, because they've saved my life, you know.
Where can people get your memoir, Con?
My memoir is for sale in Limerick, in O'Mahony's in Limerick. It's for sale in the Crescent Shopping Centre here in Limerick. It's for sale in Kentork, in Mullins, Hogan's and Duane's Pharmacy and Super Value as well. And, you know, I just want to say thanks as well, Joe, to, you know, anyone that's going to buy the book as well. I have 2 euros going to be going to Cork Penny Dinners, who's Catherine Atumi, who does fantastic work, and the Limerick Writers Centre as well. They do fantastic work, and everybody that has been there for me over the years, like, they have to be thanked as well.
Okay, it's called I understand. Sorry. The Shadows on My Shoulder, Con Hurley. Well done, Con. The heartwarming memoir of a larger-than-life Irish family. Drost. McGill, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
It's a remarkable book. It's called Stig Magic. Yes. I'll tweet a photograph of it now. It's about something very close to my heart, which is typography.
Yes, indeed.
And you've invented a typeface, a new type, in fact, more than one, as far as I can see.
So tell
me why you invented a new typeface, or designed a new typeface.
Yes.
Probably the best.
Well, Joe, I'm a professional graphic designer.
Okay.
And I've published a number of books, and usually what I do is, before I start to make the layout of the book, I design the typeface first that I am going to use throughout the book. And for this book, Stig Magic, I designed a typeface which I called the Gallivanter.
The Gallivanter?
Yes, it's based on the stroke of a calligraphy pen.
It's beautiful. It is beautiful.
Thank you.
Now, it's almost like a typeface that you would see in a medieval story. It's very legible.
Thank you. Yes.
And what else have you designed?
Well, indeed, my main interest is in, as you mentioned earlier, typography. So I try to give the typography a special treatment, but also I'm. That accompany the short articles and the stories in the book. The book is divided into a number of chapters. The first chapter is called Culture, with some different features there, like there is a story about the Brehon Laws and the first railway line in Ireland and the Botanic Gardens. And there is a chapter about travel. And what I decided to do was I reintroduced a feature that was used in old manuscripts, like the Book of Kells or the Book of Durrow, where it was the habit of the writers to have what was called a carpet page between the chapters. And a carpet page is a page that it's like, for instance, an ice cream between courses to refresh the palate, so to speak.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Who produced? Because it's a beautiful production.
Thank you.
Now it's a limited edition of 100, and they're selling for €95 each.
Yes, now, from the Winding Stair Bookshop.
Winding Stair, okay, there in Delir Street. Now, do you hope to commercialise the typeface, or is that ever? Well, it is possible. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I had a book launch only a few nights ago on Wednesday night in Hans Teeth Studios, and the good designers there have already expressed an interest in some of the typefaces that I use in the book.
Okay, well, I just say to people, as I said, I have an interest in typefaces, and a lot of people have, because most recently because of the growth of computers and laptops, and the lads in Apple were always big into typefaces. But there's a fantastic documentary on Netflix. It's in their design series, and it's Jonathan Hoefler.
Yes. I know him.
Do you? Brilliant. He's probably the most famous typeface designer in the world at this stage,
yes,
is he?
Yes.
Yes. And just to see the detail, the analysis, the measurements you have to go into, the sequencing, the relativity between different letters,
it's
fascinating.
Yes. That's
and do you see many crimes against typography?
Well, I must tell you a funny story.
Okay.
About a couple of months ago, I was in Beaumont Hospital for a procedure that I was not looking forward to. I thought it was going to be unpleasant. Mm-hmm. And the nurse gave me a leaflet which explained the nature of the procedure. And to my amusement, the letter for the leaflet was Comic Sans.
Sorry, I'm trying to get a book about the flower. Comic Sans for a leaflet.
Yeah, Comic Sans.
Yeah, which is a light-hearted typeface, isn't it?
It
really?
Is. It is. So in a way, that put me at ease.
Okay. Well, I see. I hate anyone who mixes up lowercase and uppercase, which happens all the time in the one word. I could name about five examples around Fairview alone where they have committed crimes against typography.
But anyway,
I know the late Fergal Quinn used to rail against the misuse of the apostrophe, but for me, it's typography.
Oh, famous, yeah.
Okay, so hopefully you can commercialize. How many typefaces have you designed? How many new typefaces overall, or is this the first one?
Well, it took me a long time to get the hang
of
it, because, you know, it's something that you have to learn. But now this last one that I use in this book, the Gallivanter, I think is a typeface that I am happy with.
A typeface that you what, sorry?
That I'm happy with.
Yeah, you should be very happy with it. Now, just finally, you also have a few pages where you take, for example, Dublin Bus and stamps. But Dublin Bus, what have you done there? These are just your proposals, are they?
No, the thing is, I took the logo type from Dublin Bus.
Yeah.
And I suggested that depending on the destination of that particular bus or the particular route, that they therefore should adapt their logo type to a feature on the destination. For instance, if the bus is like the 46A, it's going to the park.
Yes, Phoenix Park.
And, Phoenix Park. And so maybe therefore the logo should reflect that.
And your logo has the Dublin Bus logo, which is the monarch DB in a kind of with a castle turret feature on it to give the sense of Dublin, but it's DB. What you've done for the Phoenix Park one, as well as an image, you put antlers on the Dublin Bus.
Oh yes, indeed, because there are so many deer.
And what you've done for Botanic Gardens is you've the Dublin Bus logo becomes a embroidery of beautiful flowers.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah, well done. And any interest in Dublin Bus? Because it's a great idea. By the way, you know you know what it's a great idea for as well, Miguel? People who have difficulty reading and writing.
Okay.
To be able to see, like, it'd be obvious looking at, say, I'll tweet your Botanic Gardens one. It'll be obvious, and like, we send it to Dublin Bus, try and get you a bit of work out of it. But
yeah.
It'll be obvious just looking at the logo. yes. that it's that this bus is going to the Botanic Gardens, for example.
Yes, indeed.
And then you would change the logo at different times of the year. Halloween would be great.
Oh
yeah,
that's to do.
Yeah, well done. Okay, I hope you do keep designing, because it's a fantastic, and we take we obviously of a given day we probably see 200 different typefaces, 300 different typefaces.
Yeah, yeah, but
they all work on so many levels. But yes. This is top class, Stigmatic by McGill Dross. Where are you from originally, McGill? What part of Dublin?
I'm originally from Amsterdam in the Netherlands.
Okay. And what part of Dublin are you living in?
Glasnevin.
Oh, fantastic.
Near the Botanic Gardens.
Near the Botanic Gardens, okay.
Yes.
Well, what would you put in for Glasnevin Graveyard, I wonder?
Yes, that's right. I have to think about that one.
Okay. Well, a headstone, obviously, or...
Yeah, but yeah.
A skull or something. Okay, Michael, well done. Anyway, I urge people, if they're in the Winding Stair, which is a great bookshop, by the way, there on Dalier Street, go in and have a look at the book. Now, Michael, because you've only produced 100, I'm going to send this one back to you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, we'll take a few photographs of it and tweet them, but we will send it back to you, because it's such a treasure. And I think, have you signed each one and numbered it, or just to give it a unique little...
Well,
setting
yes,
point.
Last Wednesday evening during the launch of the book, I did sign it.
I reckon you've beautiful handwriting. You probably write with a fountain pen, and you probably
I do, actually.
I know
yes.
you do. I know. I can see into you through your typeface, and you you use black ink most of the time. And
exactly.
Yes, I know that. And I'm guessing here. And you are calligraphically. Creative, which is there's not enough effort in the world today put into handwriting, as you know, especially by young people.
That's
well, congratulations.
True,
it's a fantastic achievement. Don't let it out of your hands. It's called Stigmatic by Michael, Michael Drost, but it's in the Winding Stair in Dublin. Yes. I'll tweet that. Thank you. Dennis O'Higgins. Dennis, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe, and thank you.
Tell me about your book. It's called Fireside Miscellany, a collection of Irish memories, meanderings, and history.
It is indeed, Joe. Yes.
And you're based in Monaghan.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, tell us about. Oh yeah, this famous, incredible, not famous, this fascinating story you've unearthed about the Newcastle disaster in 1843. What happened?
That's right, Joe. That's one of the stories. Yeah, it was a time, of course, the times were different and people didn't have life jackets or anything.
Yeah.
But the boat went out, the 12 boats, fully manned, went out from Newcastle Pier to do their normal day's fishing. But it was a Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
And the older men were decided they wouldn't go.
Okay.
But the younger men who needed income decided that they would. They weren't superstitious in any way.
Okay.
So they headed on out anyway, and about 5 miles out, they weren't getting much of a cache. The fish supply was very poor. So they decided to travel further out into the Irish Sea, and they went out about another mile, 6 miles, and they got an adequate catch. And they were anxious to get home again, because it was a bank holiday weekend, and they were, like everybody else, they were looking forward to getting back to their families. But the storm blew up very suddenly, snowstorm, and wind and fog and everything was thrown at them. And unfortunately, most of them, the boats, were flooded with water and sank. A number of lifeboats left the pier in Newcastle to go out and find the missing men. They didn't know at this point they were drowned, and they also unfortunately became victim to the sea, and they were drowned.
So how many perished in total, Dennis?
There were over 70
altogether.
Perished.
And then you tell the story in the chapter called Widow's Row.
Yes.
Yeah, that's it. Well, tell us what is Widow's Row, and does it still exist?
It does, Joe. Now, when my attention was first drawn to that, I do a bit of walking in the mornings, and I was passing near that way, and we used to do a wee bit of camping in our younger day, too. And I always noticed these houses that just were different than the houses around about them, 12 of them.
Yeah.
So I decided, because I like researching and I like
writing,
all that,
yeah, yeah.
And I decided I'd inquire into it to see why were they different. And I called into the library in Newcastle one day, and I must say they were very helpful to me there and gave me a lot of cuttings and old papers and that, so copy them for me. And I took them home with me and I made more inquiries, and I found that those houses, the 12 houses, were built for some of the... There was a collection taken up after the horrific event, and some of the money was spent to house the widows of the fishermen.
Yeah.
And they are indeed still there today and still being lived in and looking very well, and indeed they're protected now by law, they're listed.
And I'm looking at them on, if it's the same. By the way, there's a widow's row in Beltorbit in County Cavan as well. Did you know
that? Didn't know that. Never knew that.
And there's a widow's row in I'd love to know why the one in Beltorbit is called widow's row.
Oh.
Are the houses of 12 different colours? Are beautifully...
Well, some of them are different colours now. The last time I was up there, I did notice that. But initially, I suppose they wouldn't have been, they'd all been the same.
They look beautiful.
But the structure...
2, 4, 6...
Yeah, it's still the same and can't be
12.
Interfered with.
They're beautiful colours. They're stunning. I'm just looking at... Now, it says, are some of them available to rent? Self-catering cottages. I'll tweet a photograph from Google Earth.
Right,
The only thing is the wheelie bin in the front garden. Can we get rid of the wheelie bins from people's front gardens?
They wouldn't be there when they were built.
I don't think so. They wheelie wouldn't, all right. That is a great find, Michael, and a great story.
Yeah.
And let's find out if there are others. There's a widow's row in Newcastle. There's a widow's row in...
Beltorbit, you said.
Yeah, Beltorbit.
Yeah.
I remember you, Leonard, wrote a great... great movie script called Widow's Peak.
Oh.
Do you remember that one? It was all widows.
Right.
Excuse me, all widows living in the one spot.
I'll have to inquire into the Beltorbit one and see if there's any story there.
Widow's Row, and there's a Widow's Row in Shilbottle, Alanwick in the UK.
Oh.
There's a Widow's Row in Lincolnshire. There's a Widow's Row in Newcastle, as I say. That's the one we're looking at. So,
I was just thinking, Joe, after I printed the... book Fireside Miscellany, someone could look at that heading and call it, that might think of Widow's Row, but if not, it's Widow's Row.
Widow's Row, of course. Oh no, you're right, you haven't.
Yeah.
So it's a beautiful production. Well done. Where can people get it, Dennis?
People can get it, well, it costs £10 a book, and they can get it in Goodcrack in Ross River, County Down, Easons, Monaghan and Cavan, Brayside Stores in Clontibret in Monaghan, and Newsround in Roscommon and Longford.
Well done. Okay, it's a great achievement. That's Fireside Miscellany by Dennis O'Higgins. 51551 joe@rt.ie and @joeLiveVine and @RTE LiveVine. Please tweet and retweet the books to support them.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And joe@rt.ie. It's called Reflections. It's the autobiography of Mark Talbot. Mark, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Joe.
Tell us, you're a freelance motorbike photojournalist in the 80s and 90s.
I am.
Okay, so, but you had a change of life, so to speak, in 2008. What happened, Mark?
I lost my sight. I have no shadows, no light perception, absolutely nothing.
And what, did you gradually lose your sight?
Absolutely not. It was like a click of a fingers. I was in coma on full life support, given less than a 20% chance of survival. And even if I did wake up, my cognitive state couldn't be guaranteed. My wife was told to expect the worst.
Yeah, but hang on, did you collapse? Is that what happened?
I absolutely did. I was on holidays with my wife and son in Finland, where my wife is from. The memories of which I have no recollection.
Okay.
And quite honestly, Joe, I should never have gone, but I did. And 2 days later, I was found unconscious in my loo and rushed to Loughlinstown Hospital, where I spent, well, a considerable time there. Mm-hmm. Eventually, I woke up and was moved to Vincent's, where I spent 3 months. Within the first week of being in Vincent's, it became apparent that I had no sight.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And I've been in darkness ever since.
And what was the diagnosis? What had happened?
Pneumococcal disease or meningococcal disease, central lobe of the brain. It gave me double pneumonia, septicemia, and bacterial meningitis, which destroyed the optic nerve. So whilst my eyes look clean and clear, mm-hmm. I have zero sight.
And do you know where you picked it up or what happens? Or
no clue.
It's not always there and it suddenly ignites? Or
yeah, it's a virus. So I've no idea how I contracted it. I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis back in 1992. Mm. And Joe, I was always terrified of losing my sight to MS, which is distinctly possible. Because I was into the travel and the visual, motorcycle racing and photography. So I was terrified of losing my sight to MS, never thinking that I'd contract something totally unrelated that would do the very job I so feared and plunge me into darkness. And I've been that way since 2008.
But you've written, and why shouldn't you, and why shouldn't people who are visually impaired not be able? You've written nearly 400-page autobiography. Just the actual process of writing, Mark. I know technology is wonderful, and but tell us how you did the process itself.
Honestly, Joe, when I lost my sight, I was the famous Two Finger Brigade, maybe three, maybe four, but no way did I have touch typing, which I have to be proficient at in order to use the audio typing assist software that is available. And I learned it in 2 hours, and I've gone on from there. I've broken the million word count in my fiction stuff, two items of which mm-hmm. I'm determined to self-publish shortly. And the first target or task was Reflections, which, whatever about the name of memories and looking back, it's actually the name of the pub that I met my wife in 1987 in Bray.
Okay, well, that's a good enough reason. That's fantastic. And but it's a very positive book.
Most definitely, because again, it's not the woe is me, because that's not me. I'm very okay, positive, maybe resigned to my situation, but just getting on with things and doing my best to be my best.
Well put. And where can people get Reflections by Mark Talbot?
It's not in shops or online, only direct through me.
Yeah, fine.
An email is all lowercase marktalbot@aircom.net.
That's it.
And you contact me, and I will respond with an email informing you of how to get the book. It's €18 each collected here, or €25. Including post.
Somehow I don't think anyone's going to quibble with the price. It's such a substantive labour of love and a fantastic looking production.
That's 368 pages of text, trade paperback size, so not small. And the cover features my photography from the previous life. Phil Lynott of Thin Lizzy.
What year is that?
Dublin 81. The American Randy Mamola pulling a wheelie at Donington Park in 84, and then a French rider crashing at high speed in Jerez in 89.
Okay.
And the back has me astride my race machine helmet off.
And a very handsome man you are too. Reflections by Mark Talbot. Well done, Mark. And I've tweeted the details just there now. Melanie Gillespie. Melanie, good afternoon. Tell us about your book. It's called Darlene, the Drama Queen, Raises the Curtain on Bullying by Melodrama, illustrated by Jason Boucher.
Thanks so much.
Tell us about the book.
Yep, so I have a drama school. I'm actually calling from over in Boston.
Okay.
And I started a drama school about a decade ago called the Melodrama School of Acting. And I just noticed, you know, that kids were relating a lot to a character that I had created called Darlene the Drama Queen.
Okay.
And I proceeded to write a couple of books, so it's a series. And basically, Darlene, she's an amalgamation of my students. She's funny and she's feisty and silly. And I think the kids relate to her. And the idea behind Darlene is that she is a little girl that lives in drama land with her pet dragon Shakespeare and her comedy and tragedy and floating mentor masks. And kids come to her with issues that they're dealing with. The first book was about confidence. And this second book deals with an issue that I feel is becoming an epidemic for sure, which is bullying. I just started noticing, Joe, that, you know, smaller kids, younger and younger, were coming to me, you know, distressed over certain situations that were happening. So I felt responsibility as a teacher.
It started one day on Liveline. We got one call, and I think 3 weeks later, people were still contacting us about being bullied and bullying.
Absolutely, I listened to all of your shows, and some of them being a bully.
Now, people will know. Well, they surely would recognise your voice at this stage, Melanie, because you are you're not Melodrama. You're Melanie Grace Fian, and you are the daughter of the great Brendan, the late great Brendan.
Yes, I am, Joe. And you know what, I have to mention, you wrote him a beautiful card when he was in hospital and he had it taped over his bed.
Oh, God.
And your words brought him great comfort. So on behalf of my family, thank you very much.
Not at all. It's written by Melanie Grace Gillespie. Where can people get it, Mel?
Yep, so it's available actually on kennys.ie.
They're
based
in
Galway.
Yeah.
It's great, and they have free worldwide shipping, which is fantastic. They're actually restocking it at the moment.
Well done.
So if you don't see it on there immediately, it will be on there later on today.
And it's beautifully illustrated.
Oh, thank you so much. And it's funny because Dad always felt that Darlene looked a bit like the female butler. And he actually appears in the book, Joe.
Because
I found out that my dad was terminally ill the same week that I sent the book to print.
Oh, God.
And I called the illustrator and asked him if we could do some sort of an adjustment. And so I just happened to find two little birds that he, of his own accord, had put into the book.
I see it in the centre pages, don't I?
It's right in the centre page, and that was a coincidence, actually.
Butler's scarf and hat.
It's a little red bird with Butler's hat and scarf, so it's very special to us there. It's also available, Joe, in Just Books in Mullingar, and I have a few signed copies in Manor Books in Malahide, and the lads over in Gibley's pub have plenty of them in there too.
Well done. Well, it's a great idea, and it's a great purpose as well. It's called Darlene the Drama Queen Raises the Curtain on Bullying by Melodrama, who is Melanie Grace Gillespie. Melanie, thanks. Thanks indeed. And by the way, a reminder, tonight's Late Late Show is a special tribute to your late dad, Melanie. And I know there's a number of broadcasts over the Christmas period. And everyone, his documentary that Brian Redden made, I hope you were, I don't know whether you were able, in other words, up to watching it. It was so emotional and moving, but that really, really, really reached out to so many people about your great dad. Melanie, kind regards to you and your family and your mum.
Joe, thank you so much. Well done.
Thanks for making the call. Breed O'Farrell, book. What's your book, Breed? It's called At the Rider's Edge, Two Boats Around Ireland by Kayak.
Yeah, and I'm a cheat because I didn't actually write the book, Joe. It was my late husband wrote it in 1991. When he and a friend did a round Ireland trip in a kayak.
And when was it published?
Just this year.
Timmy
was diagnosed with cancer in 2010, and our children were quite young at the time. And their main memory of him has been that he was very sick.
Yeah.
And then by chance, I came across the diary. I was looking for something else.
It's magnificent.
And I thought, do you know what? It's a good old yarn. And I published, and it is absolutely beautiful. I think.
It's beautiful. It is the colours, the design, the maps, the photographs, and of course, even the typeface. They're giving it granted.
It is
his diary, is it?
It is exactly word for word what he wrote.
Wow.
He used to write a letter every single evening. He would fill in his sheet. And then he'd keep them together until he'd meet somebody, until they'd come ashore somewhere and they'd meet someone. And he had stamped, addressed envelopes, and he'd hand them to a fisherman or somebody walking along, and he'd say, "Would you post those, please?"
Isn't that great?
And he posted them back to me along the way. And he typed it up. And as I say, I came across it. And then Valerie O'Sullivan, who took the cover photo, she's a great photographer of the Skellig, she has published books. And I looked at her blog and I saw where Siobhan Prendergast of Dingle Publishing had published her books. So I emailed Siobhan in March, and I can honestly say, if anyone's thinking of self-publishing, get on to Dingle Publishing.
It really is a beautiful production. And at the back, you have charts, not nautical charts, like Total Distance, Timmy. There was two of them, wasn't there?
He was very methodical, and it's exactly as he did it, word for word. And he made a list of what he brought and what he didn't need and what he should have brought.
Wow.
But I must pay tribute to Caoimhe Cuddan as well from Bright Idea Killarney, because, oh my God, like Timmy's pages were just sheets with maps and lines on them, but Caoimhe Cuddan just brought it to life. And Bernard Ford as well, a friend of Timmy's, he was a great help. He spliced some of the photos as well. So it's a labour of love, and I just think it's beautiful. And we're giving all the profits between the palliative care unit in Tralee University Hospital and Valencia Lifeboat.
Yeah. Oh, look, he has his clothesline and pegs, tie tapes, radio, diary, cards, postage paid cards. Great idea. Reading, no book, no space. Toiletries, a minimum, soap, towel, toothbrush, paste, loo paper, foot powder. Ha-ha. We should have spent, writes Timmy, we should have spent a day just walking around supermarkets months before the trip looking at space-saving food, e.g. 7 cartons of orange juice can be got in concentrated form, saving vast amounts of space and time. Now, the tragedy is, when did Timmy pass?
It's nearly 5 years ago.
And what age was he?
He was 52 when he was diagnosed. He was 57 when he died.
I knew this was going to be heartbreaking.
That is
so sad.
Yeah.
It's called that. Where can people get the book?
It can be bought in Brittain in Killarney, and we live in Killarney, and Super Value in Killarney, and the Middleton Bookshop, because he lived in Middleton, and Yall, Creeve Cards in Yall. And then you can order it online from capinalee.ie. He was a voluntary instructor in Capinalee, so a lot of people might have remembered him. You know, he was a big, tall man, and he was just into all the outdoors.
I've scribbled out your mobile phone number, because I don't want to give out your mobile phone. But what I might do is I might just photograph the inside page with your email address
Perfect.
On it. And can I put in your other address, or would you rather leave that out?
Just the email. But can I also pay tribute to Fergal Keane on Seascapes?
Oh, great. They're a great programme.
Yeah, because Timmy and I used to listen to that all the time. And he has had Brian Lally reading from the diary on the Friday night.
Oh, fantastic.
And he's brilliant at it, Brian Lally, because Timmy was a Cork man with a lovely Cork accent. Yeah. And Brian Lally really does a beautiful voice.
I look forward to that. Is that currently on?
Yeah, it is. It was on last Friday night again. Yeah, he's at day 25 now, I think. So, yeah.
Oh, magnificent. Okay, that's a great idea. That's a great idea. I'm tweeting now just your, I just have the inside cover just so I can get your agreement here. At the water's edge, 2 boats around Ireland by kayak, in your handwriting, Breed Farrell, Killarney, County Kerry, Breed O'Farrell at iCloud, which are correct spelling there. And all profits from this book go to Palliative Care Tralee and Valencia Lightboat. Is that okay if I just whack that out?
Perfect.
Okay.
That's absolutely perfect. You're a star.
You're a star. Oh my God. And many children.
We have 2 boys, James and Ben.
Well, they should be so proud of their father.
They are, and he'd be so proud of them.
And so proud of their dear mother as well. Thanks indeed, Breed.
Thank you.
Well done. It's beautiful.
Thanks,
Joe. It's beautiful
in
every sense. 51551. More books falling off my desk here. Who am I going to next? Maria Dickinson. Oh, Maria Dickinson of Dubray Books and Irish Post Book Awards with her books of the year. Okay, go ahead, Breed. Go ahead, Maria. Sorry, I'm still talking to Breed.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Well, I have two fiction and one non-fiction and two kids for you today. So,
okay.
My fiction book of the year is for sure the Joseph O'Connor Shadow Play. Like yourself, winner of an Unpost Irish Book Award. It's the story, basically, of Bram Stoker when he worked as a theatre manager in the Lyceum. And his friendship with Henry Irving and Ellen Terry, all against this backdrop of London, Jack the Ripper's London. So there's kind of this gothic element to it. It's a fantastic novel, really rich in detail. And it felt, you know, when you read a book and it feels like the author really had great fun writing it. You know, it's really exuberant novel. Couldn't recommend it highly enough.
Okay, and has got incredible reviews, as per usual with Joseph. And someone in the Irish Examiner this morning gave it their book of the year as well. Shadow Play by Joe O'Connor. Olive Again by Elizabeth Strout. Most people will know the first Olive Kitteridge, won't they? A lot of people. I don't presume.
From the book, or of course, it was, I think, a Netflix TV series with Olive being played by Frances McDormand, which was fantastic. I actually came to these books back, but I read Olive Again and then Olive Kitteridge. She is just one of the most fantastic characters I've ever come across in literature. She's an older woman, kind of gruff, a bit misunderstood, but her heart is absolutely in the right place. And with both novels, her story is told almost through the eyes of her neighbours, her friend, the person in the grocery store, so each of whom has a narrative of their own. So you get these stories, some funny, some heartbreaking, some just mundane little stories of people's lives, but gorgeous books, really good. And this, I think, is an unusual one. It talks a lot about aging, both the wisdom that comes with it and some of the indignities that come with it, and just fantastic book.
And really, is it still is the first one was based in Maine, wasn't it? Still based
it
in
is,
Maine?
It is. Yeah, they're both. In the same time in Maine, so you get this fantastic kind of American backdrop there. And actually, on the back of this one coming out, Olive Kitteridge it's actually in our top 10 bestsellers at the moment. So,
and it's called Olive Again.
Olive Again by Elizabeth Strout.
And the beginning of the series, so to speak. Though, as we know, Elizabeth Strout has written many other fine books. It's Olive Kitteridge, a novel in short stories. Okay, moving on to How to Fail by Elizabeth Day.
Indeed, I read this halfway through the year. I found it really inspiring. Elizabeth, you might know, she has a podcast of the same name where she interviews famous people and asks them to talk about three failures in their lives and what they learned from them. And throughout the course of the book, she talks about some of these and also some of the challenges she's met in her own life. And I think in this social media driven world, you know, everyone's putting forward their best face and, you know, you see everybody's ideal life. This really digs behind it. It's a really human, really kind, very funny book about, you know, how people cope when things go wrong. But it's funny and it's inspiring and very positive too.
Okay,
so you really could give it to anybody.
And Julian Gough, did I know Julian as a musician first? And
you then did, indeed.
He moved to Berlin and then he started writing incredibly original pieces. What's this one called?
This is Rabbit and Bear, A Bite in the Night. I wanted to recommend this on behalf of my 6-year-old boy, who absolutely loves this. It's a series, actually. This is the fourth, about a friendship between a very kind, gentle bear and a very cranky rabbit. And each book has a little sort of kind message at the heart. This one is actually kind of an environmental slant to it. One of them is about mindfulness, that kind of thing. But they're really fun. Kids love them. They're really impish. There's lots about rabbit poo and things like that in them. And they're great for early readers, you know, that kind of transition when they're getting a little bit bored of picture books. But they're moving into, you know, reading for themselves a little bit. So they're a hard age group to buy for sometimes. And these are brilliant. They're illustrated by Jim Field, who's a great illustrator. So really recommend those.
And then finally, Dare to Dream by Sarah Webb.
Yeah, this is a great book with an Irish author, Irish illustrator, Graham Corcoran, and an Irish publisher, The O'Brien Press. What Sarah's done is put together a collection of short biographies of Irish people who've done inspiring things in the world. So there's a role model for every child in this book.
Okay.
Some names would be familiar. You've got the Tom Greens, the James Joyce's, the Lady Gregorys, but also some that you wouldn't have heard of. My favourite is a woman called Lena Rice, who in 1890 won the Women's Wimbledon, a women's singles championship, and was pretty much the inventor of the forearm smash. And each one has a lovely illustration by Graham and quite often inspiring quotes. So it's great to give to a child who's maybe either interested in Ireland, in Irish history, or maybe, you know, needs a little bit of encouragement and confidence. There's a great quote from Bono in it that says, when you're 16, you think you can take on the world, and you're right.
Yeah, he is right. And tell me, how many Dubray stores are there now, Maria?
Oh, we've eight, yeah.
Eight,
yeah,
great.
We just opened another one in Liffey Valley, so we're very excited
about
that.
Great shops, okay.
Thank you.
That's Dubray Books MD, Maria Dickinson. Thanks, Maria. Our own Rick O'Shea, presenter of the books programme, which goes out on Sunday evening at 7 o'clock. Am I right, Rick?
On the nose, Joe, as usual.
Okay, well, that was just, I heard it last Sunday, that's how I know. Tell us your top five, insofar as we could ever reduce any books to top five, but give us
well,
five that you'd recommend.
I'm going to give you five, and strangely, now that I look at them in front of me, I've actually picked five Irish authors this year, but it's been one of those years for Irish books again. I'll give you the first one. I'm going to suggest Ronan Hesham's Leonard and Hungry Paul. Ronan is a man who would have been known. He was a musician. He was nominated for the Choice Prize at one stage. Mm-hmm. This is his debut novel, published by a small publishing press in the UK called Bluemouth. It's a story about two guys who are both faffing around in their lives. They both still live with their parents for one reason and another. One of them is working as a kind of fill-in postman. One of them is a ghostwriter on encyclopedias. It's such a gentle, lovely, wonderful story about friendship between two men. There's not an enormous amount of drama in this book. He writes beautifully, and it's one of those rare gems that you've come across as you go, I don't think I've read anything like that in years. And it's gotten, despite the fact that it started off from relatively, you know, kind of small origins, it was nominated for an Irish Book Award this year as well, and deservedly so.
And were we not in company the other night, Rick, where did the Minister for Finance not say, Pascal Donoghue, not say that, did Ronan Hesham, was he a civil servant at one stage?
He did. Now, the thing is, we're doing this time in the wrong direction, Joe, because we were in company the other night talking about this, and thanks for the mention, cheers, recording the book show Christmas Day special, which is going out at 5 o'clock here on Radio 1 on Christmas Day. And yeah, it turns out that Ronan is a civil servant in the day job, and one of the books that the Minister for Finance, who's also on the programme, recommended was this one.
Sure. It's called Leonard and Hungry Paul by Ronan Hesham. Okay, Jan Carson, The Firestarters.
Yeah. Again, I've just been banging on about this book all year long because I don't think it got as much love as it deserved. Jan Carson is a well-known author. She's from East Belfast, which is where this story is set. It's set in modern day times. It's set just before a marching season, and you have two fathers. I don't reveal a huge amount about this, other than both of them have issues with their children in one form or another. They both come from kind of opposite ends of the scale, and part of the book is incredibly vivid. It's set in the run-up to a marching season. You can almost, you know, smell the burning in the air as it's happening around you in Belfast. And then the other half of the book is total fantasy and is complete fantastical, extraordinary things you would not normally expect. It's one of the best books written about Northern Ireland in years and years and years. Her writing is beautiful and it deserves to be read by everybody.
Night Boat to Tangier, I mentioned it yesterday. You give us your 12 words on it because you love it as well.
Yeah, Kevin Barry is pretty much the best writer we have going. And this is two guys, formerly drug dealers in a previous life, both from Cork, who are both sitting in the port of Algeciras in Spain, waiting for a ferry to come in, and then they kind of reflect on their lives. It's beautiful.
The Edna O'Brien Girl. Unusual one again. But explain what, because this has got rave reviews as well.
Yeah, it has. And weirdly, beforehand, when I was talking about it, people were going, is that some sort of sequel to the Country Girls trilogy? And it couldn't be further from it. No, it's set in Nigeria. The main character is one of the teenage girls who was abducted by Boko Haram in 2015, if I have that right. So it tells the story from her point of view. She's abducted, taken away from her family home, essentially brought into slavery. And what goes on within the Boko Haram camps, how she attempts to deal with it while she is there, and then ultimately when she's released, and when many of the Boko Haram girls ended up going back to the towns and the villages that they came from, how she is accepted or not accepted, and how she's viewed suspiciously by the people that she grew up with. So it's mostly about that. You can read it as a little bit about a parable about Ireland in the kind of 1950s and 60s, but it's Edna O'Brien, just a top form.
And a writer, I think, is... doesn't get the publicity he deserves, though he does get awards, and that's the wonderful Niall Williams, going back to Four Letters of Love, which I read years ago. An incredible writer. An incredible writer.
And I'm so pleased that this book has been picked up by so many people this year. This Is Happiness is both exquisitely written as a book. It's really funny. It is a story of a 17-year-old lad who ends up back in a small village called Faha in the west of Ireland, just as rural electrification is coming in and is becoming a thing. He's gone back after being a bit of a failure because he couldn't make a decent hand out of being a priest. The rural electrification guys show up. One of them comes back to the village. He also has a bit of unfinished business from his own earlier days in the village. And he hangs around with the family while he's in the process of attempting to get rural electrification up and running in Faha. I think you have to read it to get your hand on it. It is funny. It is beautifully written. The characters are amazing. And it's one of those books that actually was picked up by the New York Times. They had it in their best books of 2019 as well. So, you know, people around the world are managing to get a handle on it too.
Which is remember reading The History of the Rain. Another Niall Williams book, and his description of rain is just incredible. The most you want to put up an umbrella reading it almost. It's so he's a beautiful writer. Does he? What Rick? Does he not do the? Maybe I'm missing things, but I know he lives in Clare, as far as I know. I've never met the man. But does he not do the circuit, so to speak?
Well, maybe
he doesn't have to. But his books are so reflective, so calming, so beautifully written.
I think there's a little of that. I know his wife a little bit. Necessarily like to leave his part of the world if he can avoid doing it. I know he was up for the Unpost Irish Book Awards, and rightly so. One of our plans for the book show next year is we're going to go down to Niall Williams' house, and we're going to go and record an interview with him down there at the early part of 2020.
Well, can I come and hold your microphone, Rick? And
you are welcome any day of the week, Joe.
I just love his books. Okay, thanks indeed, Rick O'Shea. Your program, well, it's on this Sunday, I presume, as well.
It is. This Sunday we've Owen Colfer. And Jan Carson actually on the one this Sunday, and then we're on Christmas Day at 5 o'clock for the 1 hour special, which includes yourself.
Okay, thanks indeed, Rick. That's Rick O'Shea, and also, as I say, Christmas Eve in Grafton Street. I make a short appearance in we recorded a long session on Monday night with Rick, with loads of different writers, so they'll distill it down to 1 hour, and that sounds to me like it could be very good. On St. Stephen's Day morning, I have a 2-hour special called Legacies, produced by Brian Lally, the aforementioned, and that's looking back at the legacies of the prominent people who died in Ireland and indeed abroad in this past year. And then on the 29th, I have a special 1 hour programme talking to John McKenna about Leonard Cohen. I think that's at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and that we recorded a long session again. Truly memorable session from my point of view, because I said very little, which means it's very memorable for the audience for the change. And that was recorded at the All Together Now Festival down in Waterford earlier in the year, and that's on Saturday the 29th. Okay, 51551 Joe at RT. Bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
The self-published book is called Implosion. It's written by Mirish O'Clarty. Mirish, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. Thanks for having me.
And what age were you when you wrote this fantastic science fiction novel set in the near future?
I was 10 years old, and I'd gone through a bit of a Marvel superhero phase. I loved Captain America, Iron Man, Batman. I loved them all, and I really love this idea of
if you can move the phone a little bit towards your, I'm not presuming it's anywhere else, but a little bit towards your mouth, we might get a better sound, we think. Yeah, that sounds good. It's set in 2026.
Yes.
Okay, we'll try ringing you back and sorting it out, because I want to give you, because you're our youngest writer, and it's set in 2026. The book plot centres around the splinter organisation, the Eagle's Blood, which was formed in the aftermath of ISIS, mainly based in the USA. Now, remember, he wrote this book when he was 10 and 11, so it was written 3 or 4 years ago, before ISIS was, in the words of Donald Trump, defeated, if that's the truth. I played around with the idea in my head. I wanted to make a blockbuster action film, as we all do, Manish. But after advice from my dad, I settled for the book first. Very good advice from a very wise man. The book is available from Books at One.ie, Books at One, which apparently is a great website, Books at One.ie, and that's the email address, and they're very supportive for not-for-profit community bookshop in Lewisburg. Or it's I've tweeted the cover of the book. The email address is MarishaO'Clarity@Geralds.ie. Vukashin, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Tell us about your book. It's a mighty tome. It's called Asylum Archive.
Yes, thanks a million. It's the book that I've published last year sometime with the help of Create and Arts Council of Ireland. And it's a book based on my personal experience of being an asylum seeker and seeking international protection in Ireland. It's the book that exposes the red provision sites and localities in Ireland. It's the book that calls for an ultimate end of direct provision.
Okay, and what are the, tell me about the photographs. Are they current locations of direct provision centres?
Well, if you go at the back of the book, Joe, you will see, because I worked almost a year with the designer of the book, Niall McCormack, and there there's a map of the sites who are currently open and who are currently closed, okay? So okay. I've been doing this work for the last 13 years, Joe, okay? So
how many direct provision sites? This is incredible. How many direct provision sites are there in Ireland?
At the moment, and we are, the book is sold out, just to tell you this, okay? And we're going to go in the second screen. There are 38 direct provision sites in Ireland, apart from the emergency accommodation centres that have appeared in the late 2018, because we didn't have enough direct provision centres to accommodate asylum seekers, so we have opened emergency accommodation centres. Yeah.
And in Dublin alone, there's just one page where you have you do a lot more inside, but you have photographs of all the direct provision centres between 2007 and 2018 in the north side of Dublin, North City.
Yes, that's correct. Incredible. In the history of Ireland, in the history of Dublin, from the inception of direct provision in November 1999, there were 54 direct provision centres located in Dublin area. Wow. Okay?
Yeah.
At the moment, Joe, and may I please say this, there are only two, okay?
Okay.
One is in Clondalkin Towers, and the other one is Reception Centre in Belfastkin.
Okay. And what was your experience briefly in the direct provision centre, Vukashin?
Well, thanks for asking this, Joe. It was very tough, you know. It was very, very tough to be personally saying this to you. And I came from Belgrade, which is a 3 million people city, bigger than Dublin. I was placed or transferred to one street town in the middle of rural Ireland in County Mayo, okay? Mm. And I lived there for almost 2.5 years, but it's okay. I brought with myself a small Olympus camera, and I remembered that I have graduated photography back in Belgrade Arts University, and I start to take the photographs, okay? And that was my coping mechanism, and that's what the book is all about.
And did you leave Belgrade during the war?
No, I haven't.
The Balkan
Joe,
conflict.
No, I haven't. I was I stayed there all those years trying to say and make a statement that I'm not going to leave. We're going to make a better place for everybody included. But Joe, that wasn't possible. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The new government came after the revolution, after the overthrow of Milosevic, and they were very, very slow in particularly prosecuting the war criminals who committed the crimes against Muslims and Kosovars in former Yugoslavia. And would my beloved Prime Minister at the time, Zoran Djindjic, have been assassinated in 2003 in the middle of the day in Belgrade, I said to myself, it's not going to take too long before I leave my country.
But Hungary is in the EU.
Say it again? No, it's Yugoslavia, Joe, yeah.
Oh, sorry, Yugoslavia, sorry. It's my fault.
Serbia now.
Okay.
No.
It's Budapest I was thinking of, obviously.
No, it's okay.
Yeah, of course. The war I was referring to, obviously, was the Balkan War. It's a massive tome. How did you, who financed it?
Well, that's the thing. I was talking to Fergus earlier on, because all of my work has been done for the last 13 years or 12 years without any funding. So I went to all of those direct provision centers with the lovely support of my family, my wife, Siobhan, and my daughter, Koch, who said, just go, we'll make you a bit of lunch, and just go. So I went, and then I applied for this bursary, and I got a bursary from CREATE, which is a national agency for collaborative arts, funded by the Arts Council. I got the Arts and Activism Bursary, and I got 10 grand, okay? And then I said to myself, what am I going to do with that, Joe, when the work is almost done? And I said, let's go and make the book. So we have a tactile proof of the most, if I can say this in your program, Joe, okay, if you don't mind, of the most appalling treatment of people who came to Ireland to seek international protection.
And as you say, well, hopefully a lot of the ones you photograph are closed. I know they all
are. Some of them are closed, yeah. But listen, some of us went to, who were part of the correspondences and anthology edited by Jessica Trainer and Stephen Ray. We went to President's house the other day.
Oh, it's a new
crowd. We were so welcome
brilliant.
There.
Absolutely.
And Mr.
Great.
President spoke his mind about the refugees and asylum seekers and direct provision. But the thing is that I just
have to move on.
No, that's okay, Joe.
No, by
sorry,
the way, the book is available. It's nearly sold out, but it's in the Library Project in Temple Bar, excuse me, and it's also in Dublin Public Libraries. It's a beautiful production. Fokuskan is originally from Belgrade in Serbia, as the former Yugoslavia before that horrific war and the everything that happened, and indeed is still happening in the aftermath. Fokuskan, thanks indeed. That's Fokuskan Nedeljkovic, and I will tweet all the details now so you can refer to them. But a reminder, it's in the library. Support your local library. If you're not a member of your local library, I don't care what your background, I don't care how much you think you earn every year or what social circle you mix in, you have to join and support your local library. Go along with One Identity. It's now, you get online, you get incredible facilities online, and the more people in our local libraries mean that when push comes to shove, no government can actually touch one of our greatest resources, our free public libraries. I should also mention Books Upstairs is in Dalier Street, and the Winding Stair is back over at Hapenny Bridge. The Winding Stair, I got me stairs and me steps mixed up, so to speak. The Winding Stair, and the Winding Stair is where you can see and purchase, if you wish, that beautiful stigmatic book on the with the new typography and incredible graphics. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
It's called Dublin 1972. It's by Marty Power. Marty, where are you now? Tell us how you came to write the book. And also, you're in Australia, so I want you to tell us about the heat wave at the moment, what it means. Begin with the heat wave and then go into the book.
Good evening, Joe, from Perth, Western Australia. How are you?
Good. Keep going.
Good. Well, the heat wave, well, we had it last weekend, but when you live in Western Australia, we get everything first and then it travels across over to the east. So last weekend we had 4 or 5 days of 40, 41, 42 degrees. Daytime down to only about 25, 26 at night. So it's gone across, but it left a lot of damage in Western Australia. A lot of bushfires, a lot of damage to flora and fauna, but life goes on, Joe. You know, you get up the next day, you go to work like everywhere else. It's one of the things. We live with it. It happens every year, but very, very hot this year for some reason.
And then the tragedy,
climate change,
the tragedy in the last 36 hours of those two volunteer firefighters who were killed, young men with families killed, driving. Okay, tell us, driving to the fire, and then the political storm with the PM on his holidays in Hawaii, having to...
He's on his way back, I believe.
You want to get back quick enough, or he might be on his way out. It's called Dublin 1972. Yeah. What's it about? It's a true story, obviously.
It's true. It's fact and fiction. It's about myself way back in 1972 was coming of age year for me, I suppose. I was 16 years. I'd left school, growing up in working class Dublin. Money in my pocket, getting interested in music, clothes, girls, and reggae, and Manchester United, and Bowie. And then, you know, the years went by. 15, 16 years later, we emigrated to Australia in 88, myself. My wife Caroline had two kids, and we are here in Australia 4 or 5 years. Days weren't long enough. Absolutely loved it. But then, like a lot of people who emigrate, all of a sudden you get the phone call from Dublin. Sadly, my brother had died. Went back for the funeral, came back to Australia. It took me a while to settle back in, but the one thing I really wanted to do was to write about the times when we were kids. Well, I picked a 1972, which, you know, I was 16, my brother was 15, and grabbed myself a biro and a jotter way back in 1997 and just started to write down a few memories. And one thing led to another. This, you know, scribbling eventually turned into a manuscript. And over the next few years, a few family friends here started reading and said, hey, mate, you got to really do this or something, et cetera, et cetera. So eventually it turned through the computer into a book. Back in Ireland, 4 or 5 years later, I left it down to a fabulous guy in a little company called Lettertech in Cork, Andrew Hayward, who's been with me all the way, and he said, self-publish a Marty. And
great, well done. Skinheads and denim, what Doc Martens, Muhammad Ali in Croke Park, drugs in abundance, murder and mayhem only up the road in the north, 500 people killed that year. And Marty Curran, which is yourself, I presume, and has a little gang. And the front cover has Skid Row, the Great Bush Shields band, Brits Out. It's a graffiti. The Taste, Rory Gallagher, leads our SH1T, and character on the front cover. It looks remarkably like Paul Cleary of the Blades. But anyway, well done, Marty. Well, where can they get the book?
The book can be got on Amazon.com, but also can be got in Hannah's Bookshop in Rathmines. And just ask for Kevin. He knows me well. Tell him you're talking to Marty on Joe's show, and he will look after you. It's about 14, 15 euros. And hello to everyone in Ireland.
Okay.
All my friends in Ireland who are possibly listening in. Thank you, Joe.
Okay, Marty, and kind regards to all our friends and listeners in Australia, especially at this difficult time. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
A quick mention, Paul O'Murcu. Paul, good afternoon. Off you go quickly. It's a remarkable book. I thought it was the Christian Brothers who did the grammar of modern Irish. But you've written a 400-page book, a grammar of modern Irish. Why and how did you do it?
I did it just by sheer dense stubbornness. It was not meant to be such a huge undertaking, but I was mostly because the Christian Grammars book was rather I thought it was very unclear, and so I wanted to write something that people could have.
Okay, where can people get it? I'm out of time. Where can people get a poll? Paul O'Murcu.
The Dingle Bookshop is one in Dingle, and also Four Masters Bookshop in Donegal. And all the rest of the bookstores pretty much throughout Ireland.
Okay, and it is supported by the Irish language groups, I hope, and state bodies.
It's kind of an outlier, this book.
Yeah,
so it's a book for the rest of us.
It's incredible production. Well, I'll tweet that as well. Okay, back on Monday with our top 10 highs and lows on Tuesday in Grass Street. Dave Gibson, Sound, Laura Lee Davis, the BCO, Fergus Sweeney produced. Ray Darcy's next.